Stand by. Your Steve Jones Show audio is loading now. SteveJonesShow.com podcasts are sponsored by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, the beverage supermarket.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motor Studios mobile today on this Friday, and we're brought to you in part by our good friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Kevin, by the way, I noticed the back of his car is stocked up. There's enough to get everybody in the Yingling tent here all excited. All right, so
it's a long weekend for me. I'm ready.
Evidently. Not only that, you brought a trailer. It's filled, too. Well, since we're at Pocono International Raceway, this is your weekend. You have ached for this weekend. It's here.
24 long years.
Right? And the problem is you have not aged gracefully about it now.
No.
But you have loaded us up with guests, so please.
And Brandon Ignowski is joining us here from Pocono International Raceway. Brandon, you and I talked a couple of days ago in the media conversation. One of the things I asked you, and I thought it was an interesting story, how did you get open wheel and IndyCar to come back to Pocono?
Wrong place, wrong time.
That was the best answer, by the way. I love that. I just sat there. I'm like, okay.
No, it was, I happened to be down in Florida. Jenna Fryer from the AP, who writes for NASCAR and also covers for IndyCar, she was trying to get Randy Bernard and I together. And he was supposed to be in Daytona that year, and he wasn't there. And so I was in South Florida for around St. Pete. So I called the IndyCar folks and said, hey, I'm going to be in town. I haven't been in IndyCar race since 1989 when we threw you guys out of here. Why don't I come by and see what you're all about? And that was it. With Jenna knowing I was going to be there, she was covering that race. And then because NASCAR was out in California that weekend, the minute I showed up, everybody saw me. All the media guys saw me, which then instantly blew up Twitter. Then the fans went crazy. Oh, my God, Brandon's there.
And I was happy to do my part in that.
Everybody did. And you know what? But that is exactly why you guys are sitting here today. Because of that fan, those fans and how passionate they were about bringing IndyCar back, it literally, there was no conversation when I was there with Randy about bringing IndyCar here. It was after that when it really got out and more people started talking about that we were there, that it really started to blow up. And then by listening to all the fans on Twitter, and I'm very active on Twitter, to listen to all the fans on there and like, wow, we might actually have something here. And then we went and hired a company and did a big research study and realized, yep, the fans are still here. Yeah. And I got to admit, the number that they hit on for what they pegged up for our tickets, we're pretty darn close to what we're sitting at right now. So with the nice weather and ticket sales still continuing for another 2 days here and a great welcome crowd on Sunday, we'll probably even be better than what we anticipated. So we're excited about that.
Now, this had been a part in the 70s. This has been a very important race on the Indy circuit. Because it had been part of the Triple Crown for USAC at that point, including Ontario being the third part of it. How did it fall apart between the two? And then it obviously sounds like it didn't take much to repair it once some phone calls were made.
Depends who you ask why it fell apart. From what I know, being a kid growing up around here, my grandfather got tired of all basically when USAC and CART split, that was the beginning of the barrel relationship. And then the boycott, when they boycotted the races here and we had to mix some Indy cars and some sprint cars. And,
right.
By lap three, half the field's already a lap down. It doesn't exactly make for a good show when you got cars that are 40 miles an hour different on the track. And that started to hurt the crowds. And then, for the next few years, it just continually got worse and worse with the crowds. And the track wasn't exactly in the greatest condition back then. But I think at the same time, my grandfather really didn't care about fixing it for these guys because he was so mad at them anyway.
Right. Because
as soon as they left, he started spending money and fixing the place.
Right.
But he was basically financing the IndyCar race through the Cup races, the two Cup races.
Right.
And as a businessman, that's not the way he's gonna do his business. So, it's obviously it's a different time now. It's a different series, though it's still the same series. We're in a big transition here at Pocono. We're looking at, a lot more events, whether they're motorsports events or, we started, hosting the mud runs. We got Warrior Dash that comes in here and
right.
Tough Mudder last year. And, we're looking at, at events outside of motorsports and really using our 2,200 acres that we have here.
Yeah.
We're in a great location here in Northeast Pennsylvania, in the Pocono Mountains, an hour and a half from New York, hour and a half from Philly, hour and a half from Harrisburg. You know, it's a great location. There's a lot of people around. And if we can't use our facility for to bring all these people into the area, then what the heck are we doing here? So we're on a major growth spurt right now of what we're doing. A lot of capital expenditures that we're looking at doing here at the track, and continue to make the fan experience and the competitor experience that much better.
In the 70s and 80s, this was a 500-mile race. This will be 400. What makes 400 logical, especially on this track?
ABC made us do it.
That's a good reason.
Simple as that. The time slot that
See, why do you think Penn State's kicking off Central Florida at 6 at night?
it's amazing anymore how we have to. We're so dictated by the broadcast schedules, but then again, we kind of need them. So you got to give into them a little bit. We wanted this race to be 500 miles. Hopefully it's this amazing race on Sunday, as good as we think it's going to be. And somebody goes, hey, let's do 500 next year. And then, we'll obviously look at that. But, we wanted to be the 500, especially when we started talking about, if we're going to do this, let's bring a Triple Crown back, because it only makes sense if we're back in the schedule to bring Triple Crown back. That was a big part of the conversation. And that actually was pretty much the lead conversation about when Randy and I started talking. I said, if we're really going to start talking about this, you guys need to look at bringing the Triple Crown back, because if you can't get the Triple Crown, then there's no point in just being a race on the schedule.
You have fully invested yourself into making this race a success. Have you felt the same way about being reciprocated from Indy?
For the most part, yeah, for the most part. I mean, for what we're used to dealing with on the the marketing machine that is NASCAR, IndyCars, they're different. They just run a different ship, and it's fine. It works for what they do. Mm-hmm. But they have been great to work with, overall. I've had great relationships with some other tracks that run both series, and some that don't run both series. And I'm getting educated from everywhere, and it's actually made things a little easier.
Yeah. Is this a long term deal, or is this let's do it this year and then see how she goes?
No, when we made the announcement last year, we announced it was gonna be a three year deal.
Good.
We kind of stability for the fans, stability for the sponsors, stability for everybody involved. And I think, in anything you do, you almost need 3 years to really make a go at it and get that marketing machine really fired up, get that momentum going with the fans and the excitement and build from there.
What has the reaction been from the sponsors to take care of that part of it?
Pretty good. I mean, we've got Sunoco that signed on as the presenting sponsor.
Huge.
Everybody says, well, how come you didn't sell the entitlement? Well, we kind of wanted to keep our name on it, And the first year coming out of the bat, that was our goal. We wanted that Pocono IndyCar recognition that put that back together.
Right.
So we made a focus on that, but it's been pretty good with the sponsors.
I mean, the Rose Bowl is a great example. It's the Rose Bowl presented by whomever, because they put that first. Yep. They don't want it to be the Allstate something or other.
For years, our other races were the Pocono and Pennsylvania 500. Right. My grandfather just refused to sell sponsorship to him. He just wanted that recognition, which was great. It worked out well. But now with all the expansion we're doing, and fans always say to me, how come you sell the sponsorships now? And the best reply I can give them, and it's the honest to God truth, I can either raise your ticket price or sell sponsorships.
Right.
Which one do you want me to do?
Sell the sponsorship. Right. But this is where, for example, the PGA Tour loses some identity. Right. For example, the Travelers. Where's the Travelers? Where is it? Okay. Now, I grew up there, so I know it's in Hartford. Okay. You've kept it so people know this is Pocono.
Mm-hmm.
Very important.
Very important.
Let's take a break. It's okay. You can speak.
Hey, it's all quiet over here. It's like nervous.
No, not nervous. Just absorbing everything. Like I said, I've been waiting 24 years to be here. I'm enjoying every minute. Yesterday was fantastic, by the way. Brought the boy up with me. At watching those guys come off of turn three and pass at the beginning of the turn, the middle of the turn, and the end of the turn, that's just something that we haven't seen here in, well, a couple of decades, actually.
It was pretty exciting. I went out last week during the test and stood out in turn one on the outside of the track and walked, and you could hear the wind buffeting around the cars that came down the front stretch before you could hear the engine, which is pretty insane to think about and to witness.
But the part, for example, you mentioned NASCAR. That's been the big complaint in NASCAR. They're not passing enough. You watch the Indy 500. I'll take the lead. It wasn't like, I'm going to hang back and wait. It's like, the heck with this. I'm going by it.
It was like watching Talladega or Daytona on that NASCAR side, because if you were leading at the white flag, you were not going to be leading at the yellow flag. And, it's a shame that race ended under caution. But at the same time, I understand the tradition that is Indianapolis. Sure. And it's 500 miles. It's 200 laps. End of story. No questions asked. Right. I understand that. But I can tell you, I told the IndyCar guys, you throw a red flag. if you're not going to do a green white check or anything like that, because I understand it's unsafe for these guys and they don't want to play that. But if we got three laps left, throw that red flag. Let's have a shootout.
And it's not unprecedented.
No, they did
it's
in California.
Been done
last
before.
Year.
Exactly. That's right.
Exactly. So we're not changing the game.
He's waited 24 years for this.
I have too.
I know you have.
I was 13 the last time they ran here. My first year working.
Wow.
Thanks. I graduated high school the last time they were here.
That's okay. I was 31. All right.
On that note,
we'll come back with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Start with a trip to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury. Why? Because Brewers Outlet has not only a great selection of beer, including imports and microbrews, but also a lot more. Brewers Outlet has water, soda, they roast their peanuts every day, and you can't forget about stopping by the pickle bar. Look for great deals on wine coolers and all your favorite snacks. Before you enjoy those special times with family and friends, make your visit first to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us on this Friday. Brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Kevin has, I've never saw a tandem trailer stocked up from Brewers Outlet the way you have for the weekend.
It's a big weekend. I got to make sure I'm ready.
I mean, it's almost like you should have your own tent. Scott Goodyear joins us from ABC. Scott, welcome. It's great to have you with us.
We are so excited to be back here. We cannot wait.
Yeah, I know. The thing is, you just missed the last time it came out. The schedule came out, and it was a no-go.
It was. I'd run a Formula 4 training car here, part of the road course and the oval. And then when I signed on to do IndyCars full-time in fall of 89, preparing for the 90s season, the schedule came out, and lo and behold, Pocono wasn't on it, so a disappointment. I've always loved the ovals like Indianapolis and Texas and Michigan, yeah. Places like that. So nice to come back here and very anxious to see what's going on.
Take us on a trip around Indy and then how different it is than taking us a trip around a tri-oval.
Well, in Indy, you know, both ends, they are the same. They drive a little bit differently. I mean, both turns 1 and 3 in theory should be the same, although turns 1 of Indy is a little bit different because right. The grandstands are there, all those sorts of things, but similar. And you can talk about not only Indy, but any oval track you go to, you prepare yourself mentally and you prepare the car in such a fashion that it's going to do the same thing at both ends.
Yeah.
Not happening here.
Can't.
You can't. So, I mean, I've been here this morning talking to all the drivers, and they go, I don't know which corner to try and choose to make my car work the best at, because if I choose over here and a lot of other people choose the other turns, I'm going to lose. But, you know, I'm hearing one common thread right now is that everybody's going to probably try and work to make the car the best in turn 3.
Yeah.
For a couple of reasons. Obviously, it's leading on to the longest straight, number one. And then if there is a restart very close to the end, boy, you want to get off turn 3 to get a good run coming down the main straight. So you say it's a tri-oval. I mean, you know, a tricky triangle in the sense that, yes, you know, and I landed in Philly this morning, had run at Nazareth for many years, love yes. That place, yeah. Another place with only 3 turns. You guys yeah. Got the handle on that in Pennsylvania, by
so
the way.
So we do.
Yeah. Yeah, it's our little niche. Yeah.
So, we're going to make Beaver Stadium a 3, no.
Yeah, so love that place, and all the drivers here are having a lot of fun, so they're very, very excited.
Setup for the car is always important, regardless of race. Because of the setup here, is it a little bit different? Is there more importance in setup because of the decisions you just talked about as to what turn to do what?
It is, and you know, drivers will be asking, or engineers will be telling the drivers, we need to set up for turn 3, and then drivers aren't going to be happy in either turns 1 or 2, so they're going to come back and go, I need a little help over here. The car is sliding, it's moving, it won't work in traffic. All that you have to put into the mixing pot and see what's best for you with your car on Sunday morning. And for me now, working in television, I'm excited because there's going to be guys that are going to get it in a few turns and yeah. Guys that don't. There's going to be guys that are coming and going, passing of traffic, and there's going to be times in this race, and you know, you're going to go 30, 32 laps in a tank full of fuel. I think you're going to see guys go and take off, you know, 15, 20 laps. Man, that guy's got it yep. Nailed. And all of a sudden, you're going to start to see him come back towards you, yeah. And it's going to be a race like that.
Okay, you lived racing. You've lived in the car. Now they put – now you've been in the booth for many years now. What did it take for you to translate what you knew within the sport so that the layman can understand it and get excited about the sport?
Well, the first couple of races first off, let me back up. I had a great teacher in Paul Page.
Absolutely,
and,
no question.
And I started off with Paul Page, and he has a studio in his house, and he went there and showed me a lot of stuff. And we went to a couple of tracks before the season started, and we were, for instance, at Phoenix. And he said, you know, this is what we're going to do. And he said, well, here, let me play along a little bit. He says, we're driving from the track to the hotel in the rental car. And he says, we're going to come back from a commercial break. And it's 5, 4, 3, 2. Hi, Paul Page, along with Scott Gucci, blah, blah. And we just started doing that. Yeah. You know, and that was great for me to get on air. When I got into the booth the very first time, it was like a bit of a fan of me because, I mean, I've been sitting in the seat, understand what the office is about, but now I'm sitting and seeing so much more that, you know, I was a lot of excitement and maybe tried to get too much in that point in time. Mm-hmm. All sorts of things happened. I will take you to the very first Texas race that I did, a track that I loved, won there a couple of times, also
right.
left there in a helicopter one time
right.
after a crash. And I stood up on the top, and you could see the whole track, similar to what you have here. And I said to the guys I was working with, I said, these guys are absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
And sure. and Paul looked over at me and goes, that was you. I said, no, we didn't drive like that. He said, yeah, you sure did. Take it to a conversation with my wife now that I'm retired. And yeah. She went up to the booth one time or went up to the suite one time to watch, came back and always was on the pit lane. And I said to her, it's great up there. You can see everything from what they tell me. She says, no, I'm happy down here. When I retired, I came home and told her that story after the first television episode. She said, that was me. I didn't want to stand up there and watch you.
Yeah.
That's why I was down the pit lane all the time. And that's right. the sort of thing that it's crazy at that speed.
You and Eddie Cheever talk about this a lot on the broadcast, and that's the fact of how close these guys are getting at 220 miles an hour, especially at Indianapolis. We're looking at speeds in the 219, 220 range here for the top speeds, and you could see a lot of side-by-side racing. When you look at it now from the broadcast booth, you have a different perspective. This is just my opinion mm-hmm. from watching. It's a different perspective than when you were driving.
Very much so. As a matter of fact, I was just saying that to Alex Tagliani this morning because he just went to the Toronto Blue Jay game and threw out the first pitch on July 1st, Canada Day, obviously, as being Canadian,
yeah.
and how nervous he was and everything like that. And he said how different perspective is. And I said, you know, it's funny you're talking about that. And he and I are good friends, live not too far away from each other in India. And I said, you know, the thing that is amazing to me now when you talk about that experience that you had, I've been on the side of a football field too, is that I have more respect for what you guys do and what I used to do now that I've stepped away from it yeah. than I've ever done before. For instance, like the Texas story. And when you step away from it and you see what the guys are doing, and but when you're doing it, you are living it, eating it, and breathing it, and you don't understand. It's just part of your fabric. It's part of your makeup that day. And so now, you know, that we're talking about on television, you're right, because Eddie and I look at each other, and guys are getting close to each other, and we're hitting each other with, oh, my God, you know.
And I've stuff, heard you know? That in the in
yeah.
your voices, too. It's like, whoa.
It's just like, yeah. And a 10-second quick story on that. The year in 2006, when Rusty Wallace was with us,
yeah.
tracks that he's been to many times, we're at Richmond, and he came in halfway through the first session at Richmond because he was late because of a promotional appearance, and the cars are running and all that sort of stuff. He walked into the booth and put his headset on. He stood there, and he didn't say anything for a couple of minutes. So I looked at him and said, you okay? And we're just watching practice. We're not on air. And he goes, I can't believe it. He goes, look how fast they're going. They're hardly even lifting. I said, well, I don't even think they're lifting turns 3 and 4. And he goes, if we didn't do that, we'd crash. He goes, he has so much respect for what the IndyCar yeah. guys were doing. I don't think people understand that. But, you know, that the two-seater rides that they have here and those sorts of things, they're available to the public. They, you know, click on IndyCar.com and see if they go on a two-seater ride. You get a little taste of what's going on with these things. It's magnificent.
When you do anything well, there is a point where when you start, it feels like no matter what, to use a car analogy, it feels like everything's going 200 miles an hour. But then as you get comfortable with it, suddenly it slows down. You know, as a race car driver, I'm sure you felt that to you it felt like it slowed down. In the broadcast booth, when did you start to feel like it slowed down and suddenly instead of seeing this, now you saw all this?
Let me take you back one step further. When I was driving, you're right, it was dead slow. Indy 225, 30 miles an hour average was slow. I decided to look for retirement because things started to speed up.
Yeah,
and I now started to have to think about what was going on. Right. And as soon as I felt that, I go, now it's time for me to leave.
Yes, the second you think in anything you're doing, you are
exactly.
getting in trouble.
Absolutely. And I was around watching John Cock come back to Indy, Rutherford come back to Indy when they've been away for a couple of years and watching them come in with their eyeballs as big as saucers, you know, yeah. inside the car. I wasn't going to do that. And with television, it was, for me, it was really multitasking. You know how they're talking to you in your ear all the time and all that stuff's going on. You're watching everything like that. I got a headache. I mean, I had such a massive headache for the first couple of shows. I started doing what I used to do in race cars is that I'd start taking 2 Advils before the show.
Right.
I used to take 2 Advils before I got in the car because, you know, you're being pounded so much. It certainly helped. But I think it took a good year until you actually – have everything going where you can listen to three different conversations going on, and you can go through without – people at home wouldn't notice it, but I noticed I just paused or missed a step or something like that. And that's, you know, to a point where you're happy with it, you're satisfied with it. And I tell a lot of people, how'd you get used to it? I said, I've got three kids at home when they were small. You're driving on the highway, and you say to your wife, we're thinking about having lunch, and they're all three sitting in the back of the Suburban, and all three of them have different answers, but you know exactly which one – wants what because of their voice.
Right.
And now in television, I know the producer, I know the director, I can hear all that because you know their voice. And so it takes a while.
A question you're going to get asked between now and race day, how do you see it playing out? How difficult is it to predict how this plays out because it's the first time in 24 years?
I love the conversation I was standing with James Hinchcliffe, who just won the last race at Iowa, and then Will Power from Penske. James is with Andretti Autosport. And, you know, Andretti's going pretty good here yesterday, Andretti Autosport. And, James says to Will, he goes, your teammate Elio's the guy to beat. He's fast. Will looks at him and goes, what are you talking about? He goes, no, I was watching him, man. These guys are already playing mind games with each other.
Okay. I was wondering about that.
Okay, they're going through with that whole thing, and it's already started. And, you know, and I just love that. And more people are showing up. We're all standing there just this, like, half an hour ago in the middle of the garage area here. And then it just, everybody's all doing that. And I'm thinking back, oh, that was me. I mean, I was doing all that a little while ago. You know, it's just like, it makes you just sort of laugh. But, you know, those guys, I think I'm hearing the same common theme is that they think their cars are good. It's going to be consistency, and it's going to be hopefully some help from the traffic and playing the game out right, you know. And that's the neat thing about what we've had so many different winners this year and so many guys capable of it. Yeah. Obviously, James sort of walked away a little bit at Iowa. We still had a lot of great racing going on. But they're all saying that they expect that the cars are almost flat around here in qualifying. They do expect, and they had that at Indy, they do expect, like Indy, that they'll be have to get off the gas and they'll be passing a lot.
You and I talked a little bit about that earlier. Right now, they're flat out. They're foot to the floorboard right now, running in the 218 to 220 range. But that's in qualifying. That's qualifying trim. That's how they have it set up now. When they get into race trim, how much of that changes based on the car in front of you, based on a car next to you, with this aero package set up? How does all that change when you get multiple cars in the area?
It's still going to be fast. I was talking to some of the engineers from some teams this morning, and they're thinking probably 215 race pace, 214, 215 race pace. Qualifying probably because you're by yourself, so you're 18 and a half, 19, 219 miles an hour, and that's average, obviously. And then we're seeing, like, you know, with the 220 that we had yesterday, Marco, it's, you know, because of a bit of a toe. So, I mean, I think that's sort of what we'll see. But getting around here at these three tricky turns to average of 215 in race pace, and don't forget, you're not by yourself. You're getting your car lined up on the track perfectly. You're trying to watch what the guy's doing in front of you for the aero coming off of it to make sure that your car doesn't wash out. And then you got guys behind you that you're looking in the mirror trying to make sure that you keep those guys at bay. So there's a lot going on.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of people that are listening to the show today that may not have watched an IndyCar race before and see and hear you talk about this aero package. Kind of give us an idea of what the aero package is that they're talking about with the new Weldon design and what it does to improve the car and the speeds.
And aero is the same term they use in NASCAR. Obviously, they got a bigger car, and they put their little wings on the back and all that sort of thing. And for us, our previous car wasn't really cutting that big of a hole in the air. And when I say that, it was a small, slippery car, as single cars are. So they went through the air very well. They didn't make a big void behind it, allowing cars to sort of draft up and pass. And I'll take you to a highway. You know, you get in behind a tractor trailer, and all of a sudden you feel you can take your foot off the gas because he's pushing all the air out of the way for you, and you feel that buffeting. That's sort of what we feel in race cars here. This new car that debuted last year, and this is the second year for the Dan Weldon DW12, does that. It creates this bigger hole in the air. These guys get a better draft. So they expect they'll come out of turn three here, and then they'll go from being single file to double to three. They expect four or five wide going up to turn one. And the neat thing about this track, because, like I said, I hadn't been here for many years, and I walked up in the grandstands before I came over in the infield here today. The nice thing for fans here is you can stand here and you get to see these guys much all the way around, what's going on. You'll see guys battling in traffic or running at the front, and then you'll see them here live. And just the sound of these cars going by, they're much faster than NASCAR is running 175, I think you mentioned here. These guys are 215. They're agile. They'll be swapping spaces back and forth. It's almost going to be like that driver that you hate that's in front of you and the highway is changing lanes from one side to the other. I mean, that's but we do that and we get paid for it. Just
and there's nobody with lights coming behind you to pull you over for it either.
That's,
you know?
That's
fine.
Although, yeah, although there is an official up in the tower that's sort of keeping a tab on
good
it.
Good point.
Yeah.
A couple of things, because the U.S. Open was at Marion. It was interesting. The fans were getting frustrated because, you know, you go hole to hole. You can't. You know, the best place to watch was in the media center, right? This is the way it is. Here, the fact that they can see everything is a huge advantage for the sport.
And you can see all the pits right there, all the pit stops in front of you. You see the guys working, four tire changes and adding the fuel. And, you know, it's just really, it's poetry in motion the way that those guys opt. And then, you know, they'll come out of pit lane. And you're coming out of pit lane, and you're going 60 miles an hour quite quickly in an instant as soon as you drop the car off the jacks. I mean, that's the neat thing about it. And they get back up to speed so quickly. And with the three different turns here, the guys are telling me that, you know, going into the banking, the track's already starting to come up on you, but you still need to go straight versus what we're used to is that many places we go to, Michigan or even Texas, where you drive into and then the banking comes and you're already going around, they say it's very difficult. They're even changing their helmets a little bit right now because they can't see far enough around the turn.
Gotcha,
You know, so there's a lot of differences here. There's going to be a learning curve going on, but there's no doubt they all expect just a great race. I mean, I've never seen a group of guys so excited to go race on a track they've been at before, so that's a good thing.
Well, I had to laugh. You talked about the three. I had five. So,
so
believe me, nothing phases you.
No. Well, actually, you know, something does phase me, and you had it worse, is I'm actually starting to send them to college right now. So that's phasing me a little bit.
Oh, three down.
Yeah.
Two to go.
Oh, dude. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. I've got one in there and two about ready to ride.
That's why I stopped at one. That's all I have time to handle right now.
Scott, thanks so much for the time you gave us. Right. Appreciate it, because I know you have a lot of, you know, even more homework to do. So.
Looking forward to a great weekend, and we're on live on ABC at 12 noon, but the best place is definitely going to be sitting in the stands.
Got it. Scott Goodyear,
thanks so much. Appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. We'll come back with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Ready for a quality pre-owned vehicle? Well, get them before they go to auction at Sunbury Motors. Go to sunburymotors.com and click on pre-auction blowout. So let the sizzling summer sales event get you fired up. Like a 2005 Ford Freestar Wagon SES, just $7,991. A 2005 Lexus ES 330. Call for our lowest price promise, 888-536-8017. 2011 Ford Fiesta Hatchback SE, only 16,000 miles and factory warranty, $13,426. Open the top and get rolling with a 2011 Jeep Wrangler four-wheel drive Rubicon, $26,992, and a 2011 Ram 1500 Crew Cab Laramie. Call for our lowest price promise, 888-536-8017. All come with a Carfax report and our lowest price promise. Pre-auction blowout. 24/7 at sunburymotors.com, at the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at our dealership, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sunbury Motors, a tradition of trust since 1915.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us. We're at the Pocono International Raceway. Kevin Hurst's second home. Some people get one at Cape Cod. Some people get one down at Cape Hatteras. He has a garage here.
This is going to be my home for the entire weekend, as a matter of fact. I'm ready for tomorrow, the Indy Lights race tomorrow, qualifying for IndyCar.
They're out there practicing for Indy Lights right now. We were not blown away by the speeds.
Well, 185 is still faster than most people have seen on this track in 24 years.
I understand that.
It's not 220 like the IZOD IndyCar series, but this is the step up. This is where you graduate.
They have been crushing speeds here.
220 is about 9 miles an hour over the open wheel record here, which I believe Danny Sullivan has that one at 211 and change. And there isn't a single car that was on track yesterday that ran under 211.
Right.
That's the impressive thing. And as we were talking with Scott Goodyear, they're flat out. It is not a lift. As you always make fun, I always said I like to see him lift into the turn a little bit, a little strategy. No, the strategy now will be get by me without having to put your foot into the gas any further, because you can't.
Welcome to America.
Welcome to America.
Been trying to tell you this. Okay, you want people to show up.
Well,
right, tell them to put the pedal to the floor.
And as Brandon, the president and CEO, Brandon Ignowski, who is the president and CEO of Pocono, told us earlier in the first half hour, this is right now what they're seeing is exactly what they expected from their research. And they're right on target with still some more tickets to be sold, no doubt, tomorrow, and walk-ins on race day as well. And I think a lot of the people that were here yesterday, and I was talking to quite a few people that were here yesterday that were maybe NASCAR fans and weren't IndyCar fans. This was their first experience.
Sure.
They were absolutely amazed that of the speeds, because they're used to the stock car speeds of about 175,
yep.
And now they're seeing speeds of 220. And the racing that we only got a taste of yesterday, because they really were just trying to find qualifying speeds. So it'll be really interesting to see these guys, as Scott said, get up to speed, hit turn three, and what they can do in turn three, not just passing on the front stretch, but being able to pass anywhere on this track.
Exactly where are you sitting?
Saturday's general admission, so the best seat I can find.
No, please.
Sunday. Sunday, I am near pit out.
I'm not here to talk about practice.
Qualifying.
Practice.
I'm near pit out.
Pit out.
Yes.
Which is it on the premises?
Yes, it is. I don't know. North and south, I always get geographically confused. I think it's north in the north section, but it's near the pit out. So I'll get to see the race off pit lane. I'll get to see everybody going into turn one to see that four wide.
That's where they throttle down.
Not this year. I thought they would, but they're not going through this
year. Down to 130. That's exciting. I looked at him like, are you nuts?
No. Right? Well, that's what I'm used to seeing.
It's like
here.
Playing Powerball.
But that's what I'm used to seeing is throttle down to 130.
Well, get used
it's not going to happen tomorrow.
Used to something else.
Now, on Saturday, the Indy Lights will probably maybe lift a little bit going in, but they're still hitting speeds of near 200 miles an hour. And one of the guys that I'll be watching closely is someone that is fairly local from Nazareth, Sage Karen. Sage is an 18-year-old, was a senior at Nazareth High School, was actually a wrestler at Nazareth, and is now driving for Schmidt-Peterson Motorsports in the Indy Lights. He has won basically every level coming up. And he's won the last two races in the Indy Lights series, so he'll only get an opportunity to make it three series, three in a row. And he's 18 years old. This kid has won in the USF 2000, the Pro Mazda, the Firestone Indy Lights.
But I go back to what Scott Goodyear talked about. That when he went up in the booth and looked at what they were doing, went, oh.
But I just wondered, and I did get a chance to catch up with Sam Schmidt from Schmidt Peterson Motorsports, and I asked him, what is it that you saw in an 18-year-old high school student that made you want to put him into a race car?
It's the whole package. I mean, clearly he's been racing go-karts since a young age, and I don't think the wrestling has hurt either, because that requires discipline and training and aerobic fitness and everything else, and you can do that anywhere for free. And so when he's not in a car, that's part of the training regimen. And the clean cut American values, great family, just the whole package. I mean, you can't be successful in IndyCar now just on pure talent.
And Sam, it's got to be tough balancing life and driving, but balancing life, driving, and high school. What are some of the things as a team that you've had to do to try and help him along there?
Well, one of my rules in as being an Indy Lights team owner with six championships is that the driver must live in Indy to maximize his potential, to be in the shop, to be training, to be on our simulator, to be fully immersed in the program. And let's face it, if you want to be a full-time IndyCar driver, you got to do that anyway. So this is like the college of IndyCar racing. And so that was a big hurdle with his parents, having just turned 18. And but really, his success has continued with it. And I think you got to have that kind of focus. So I think that helps. I think it's less of a distraction, because if he's not training, he's not in the shop. Now he has to be doing homework and graduating high school. So he really doesn't have a lot of opportunity to go out and screw up.
You know, I have to ask this because I know he was one step away from states here in Pennsylvania, and I know he was not real happy about it. Is that something that
you guys talked about a little bit when he came back? It's like, okay, now here's how you take that and refocus.
Well, I mean, certainly, you know, if you're expecting to go to IndyCar ultimately and drive IndyCars without facing any challenges or any setbacks, you're delusional. So the fact that he has had setbacks and challenges and not reached a couple goals is probably making you more hungry. So it's not a problem. That's life.
Sam Schmidt from Schmidt Peterson Motorsports has a lot of drivers in the Indy Lights, including Sage Karam from Nazareth.
Yeah, they beat out Nick Saban to get the kid. So,
well, he didn't sign him when he was a junior. That was the problem.
18 years of age. Wow. But that's why, for example, you have the Indy Lights series. But still, at the Indy Lights series, you and I were watching them go around the track, you know, at 185, between 171 and 185 were the numbers we saw.
Right.
And watching them, it's amazing. You know, but part of it is you have to have the discipline, you have to have the reflexes, you have to have all of this vision.
Well, and that's one of the things he was talking about with, you know, transferring some of the things he's learned from wrestling, some of the skills there, and being able to use it in IndyCar. If you would have told me before I had a chance to talk with Sam that wrestling would lead over to IndyCar in some form or another besides the conditioning, I wouldn't have believed it. But, you know, as he went on and talked and thought more about it, you know, you think about the mental discipline, the personal discipline that is involved in that, as well as the physical conditioning that goes on.
Absolutely. No question. And brings all that to the table. And that Indy Lights race is tomorrow.
Right.
It's tomorrow afternoon.
Yeah. Tomorrow's Indy Lights race will be 3. No, wait a minute. I had it here for a second. 12:15 for qualifying. Mm. 4 o'clock for the race itself.
Right, that's what I said, 4 o'clock.
I thought you said 3 something.
I said 3:54.
Oh, well, excuse me. You're right. 3:54 is when they do the parade lap. We all start a race by the parade lap.
You're somebody who wants to
Have you been sniffing too much ethanol fumes or what?
No, you're somebody who wants to go to the experience part. Something tells me the parade lap, you're sweating.
Well, the part of the experience is the vintage cars that'll be here, too. They'll have some of the cars that ran in 1971 on this track on display throughout the weekend. So that'll be cool.
I've been to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Museum. So I've seen said cars.
Next year, that's where we take the show.
Sure, you want to go? I would have fun. I would have a good time.
Hey, guess who's coming up in the next half hour, Steve?
Vince
will be here.
Fabulous.
I'm excited. Forward.
I know you're excited. This whole thing has been.
This is the best.
Hair standing up on end for you.
I thought doing the Steve Jones show was the best moment of my career. I'm sorry, you've been topped.
It's nothing compared to this. News is next, top of the hour here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.